Well, good evening. This is John St. Germain, the Crystal Silence League Radio Hour. Gosh, I hope the weather is nice and autumn-like like it is here. Fall has finally fallen with a thud. We are in Knoxville, Tennessee, of course, broadcasting live from Castle St. Germain in the mountains of East Tennessee. Home of the most cultured society in the world, as you know. We are the armpit of the South, as a friend of mine used to call it. Tonight, we are continuing our discussion of the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, a very challenging, dense, difficult discussion of the Buddha on the factors of awareness, cultivating awareness. And we will return to that discussion tonight. This will be part three of this discussion, and we may conclude it tonight. We are down to the nitty-gritty now. We're at section E, the section on the noble truths, the four noble truths, the fourfold noble truths. So everyone get your crystal balls and set them before you. We'll be back with our crystal of the week, our weekly prayers, and our discussion of the Mahasatipatthana Sutta of the Buddha. I'm going to miss that. I've played it every week for in honor of Halloween. And we're back. And tonight we will be discussing the Mahasatipatthana Sutta of the Buddha, the discourse on awareness. But first, let's talk about our crystal of the week, Apophyllite. And, of course, our chat room is open, and you can log in with in our chat room and join our live studio audience. You can also call in if you like. Our call-in number for guests is 657-383-0525. And you can also visit us on the Internet, on that interweb thing, www.crystalsilenceleague.org. And we also have a Facebook page, which if you want to keep up with our various shenanigans, you can go there. We also have a newsletter you can subscribe to that I edit. And sometimes we're late, but we always get one to you. So our crystal of the week is Apophyllite, another beautiful crystal. You can see a picture of it on our slideshow. Not a terribly expensive crystal. It's somewhere in the mid-range. You can get a fairly good piece for around $10 to $20. And judging on how much you want to spend, you can spend up to $150 or more dollars on a cluster of it. But Apophyllite usually is clear. Sometimes it's light blue. Sometimes green. More rarely, it can be rose, yellow, or black, depending on what minerals are included in it. Mineral inclusions can tint any crystal, even quartz. Quartz comes in different colors, too, because of that. Citrine, in fact, is a form of rock crystal quartz. It has hematite in it that gives it yellow inclusions. It has iron in it. But apophyllite can give you relief from stress, help you with tension, help you with fears, help you with anxiety. Very relaxing stone. Specifically, these apophyllite crystals stimulate your third eye chakra, and it can help you with any sort of work in the crown and third eye chakras. A lot of people use it to open the crown and third eye chakra for higher spiritual work and to ascend the spiritual ladder. They'll climb from the third eye to the crown chakra, to the spirit chakra, and even higher than that. They can also be used for crystal gazing or scrying. Any clear crystal can be used for that. And to do this with apophyllite, there's an interesting technique with some of these some of these crystals, rather than gaze into them directly, you put them off to one side. You look at them out the corner of your eye, and you gaze through them or past them, and you have visions this way. This sideways scrying is an interesting technique that takes a little practice to cultivate, but it's very good for spiritual scrying. You do this kind of work for light work, for spirit work, for climbing the spiritual ladder. Some people use it for astral planing, as it sometimes is called, to travel the astral plane, to go out of body, to take spiritual journeys and things like that. So apophyllite is a very, very interesting crystal for work in the higher chakra area. We bring you the crystals most people never heard of. We don't talk about rock quartz and things like that. The more common stones, sodalite and things like that, we talk about some of the rarer crystals at this point. As you know, the Crystal Silence League was formed in 1917 to spread and distribute positive prayer and positive affirmations to those who need it by our founder, Mr. Claude Alexander Conlin. And when he passed away in 1958, I believe, he took the Crystal Silence League into the silence with him. And, of course, it was reborn on the Internet through Missionary Independent Spiritual Church. And you can find us at www.crystalsilenceleague.org, where hundreds of prayers, hundreds a week, are posted there. And you can post your own prayer there, your own prayer petition. And you'll find that when people post prayers there, you can click on those prayers to let people know that you prayed for them. It's also been my custom since the day we started this program almost a year ago that we read some of these prayers out loud, and I don't identify them by name. They're anonymous. I only identify them by prayer ID number. So if you will, just join me in sending prayer and positive affirmation to the following people whom I will identify only by prayer number. So let's start now. Prayer ID number 43523KL. Praise for relationship help between T and herself. Praise that that her partner loves her forever and needs her in his life and chooses her above all other women. Prayer ID number 43522NS is a general prayer request for her son and herself, that the transition back to work goes well and that her baby does well at daycare. That's a hard transition to make. Prayer ID number 43521 prays that she'll soon be able to buy a home for herself and her child. Then we have prayer ID number 43520, who prays for good health and for safety. Prayer ID number 43519, MP, prays for TJ, that TJ finds work soon and that Tom C. loves her very much. Prayer ID number 43518, MP, prays for a loved one whose initials are NG, and says that NG needs as much luck as possible and for things to go his way. Prayer ID number 43517, LF, prays for her husband, Jay, that he returns some items that are valuable to her. Prayer ID number 43516, CT, asks for a renewal of self, asks for regeneration, sanctification, justification. Prayer ID number 43515, HP, prays for her twin flame to be together. Prayer ID number 43514, AH, prays for her brother that he'll hear soon that he gets the job. And prayer ID number 43513, ST, needs for her daughter to get the job that she's applying for. Prayer ID number 43512, HG, is a new mother, and her milk hasn't come in yet, and prays that her milk will soon come in soon. That is the very first time we've gotten a prayer for that. Prayer ID number 43511, LS, begs for crystallization of all of his or her prayers. Prayer ID number 43510 needs protection, that Jay does well in his interview this Friday on the 30th and gets a job offer from the company. Prayer ID number 43509, DP, prays for steady work. and prayer ID number 43508AA needs protection from someone whose initial is K, needs protected from help, from theft, and needs compensation for something that may have been stolen from him or her. Prayer ID number 43507AK has many problems and is desperate for spiritual support. Prayer ID number 43506 needs protection from danger and evil. And prayer ID number 43505DP says, please keep money flowing toward me, not away from me. Man, we could use that. I just paid my taxes. And God bless the IRS. Prayer ID number 43504DM needs to get to Los Angeles this weekend, or the weekend of December 11th. Needs to see a friend desperately. May these prayers be answered, and let us all take a moment of silence to send a prayer of affirmation to all those in need. Amen, so mote it be. Our discussion today is the amazing and fantastic, difficult and dense Mahasatipatthana Sutta, the Exposition on Awareness. Last couple of weeks we've been discussing this and interpreting it and going in depth into the Buddha's words. This is the words of the historic Buddha, Prince Gotama, the Buddha of our generation, and we shall go further into it forthwith. Into Section E, we have talked about awareness of the body, awareness of the mind, awareness of decay, awareness of the impermanence of all mental and physical phenomena. Now we're going to go into the discussion that the Buddha continues into the section on the Noble Truths, the Four Noble Truths. And in the words of the Buddha, again, monks, a monk dwells observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the Four Noble Truths. How, monks, does a monk dwell observing mental contents and mental contents as regards the Four Noble Truths? Here, monks, a monk understands properly as it is, this is suffering. He understands properly as it is, this is the arising of suffering. He understands properly as it is the cessation of suffering. He understands properly as it is, this is the path leading to the cessation of suffering. The Buddha once commented, when people would ask him if there was a soul or not a soul, or the origin of the universe or not, or if there was a God or not a God, he said, I don't care about those things. He said, my teachings have one flavor, the arising of suffering, the identification of suffering, the arising of suffering, and the cessation of suffering. That is the essence of the teachings of the Buddha. Then he goes on to say, the exposition of the truth of suffering. And what, monks, is the noble truth of suffering? Now this is it. This is it, man. This is the hardball. Birth is suffering. Old age is suffering. Sickness is suffering. Death is suffering. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and distress are suffering. The association with something that one does not like is suffering. The disassociation with something that one does not like is suffering. Not to get what one desires is suffering. In short, the clinging to the five aggregates is suffering. And we discussed the five aggregates last week. And what, monks, is birth? If there is birth for all kinds of beings, in whatever kind of existence, their conception, their being born, their becoming, the coming into manifestation of their aggregates, the acquisition of their sense faculties, this, monks, is called birth. And what monks is old age? If there is old age for all kinds of beings in whatever kind of existence, they're getting frail and decrepit. The breaking of their teeth, they're becoming gray and wrinkled, the running down of their lifespan, the deterioration of their sense faculties. This monk is called old age. And what monks is death? If there is vanishing and passing away for all kinds of beings in whatever kind of existence, their disintegration, their disappearance, their dying, their death, the completion of their lifespan, the dissolution of the aggregates, the discarding of the body, the destruction of their vitality, this monk's is called death. And what monk's is sorrow? Whenever one monk's is affected by various kinds of loss and misfortune that are followed by this or that kind of painful state of mind, by sorrow, by mourning, by sorrowfulness, by inward grief, and by deep inward woe, this monk's is called sorrow. And what monk's is lamentation? Whenever one monk's is affected by various kinds of loss and misfortune that are followed by this or that kind of painful state of mind, by wailing and crying, by lamentation, by deep wailing, by deep lamentation, by the state of deep wailing and deep lamentation, this monk's is called lamentation. And what monk's is pain? If there is monks any kind of bodily pain, any kind of bodily unpleasantness, or any kind of painful or unpleasant sensation as a result of bodily contact, this monk's is called pain. And what monk's is grief? If there is monks any kind of mental pain, any kind of mental unpleasantness, or any kind of painful or unpleasant sensation as a result of mental contact, this monk's is called grief. And what monk's is distress? Whenever one monk is affected by various kinds of loss and misfortune that are followed by this or that kind of painful state of mind, by tribulation, by distress, affliction with distress, and affliction with great distress, this monk is called distress. And what monk is the suffering of being associated with that what one does not like? Wherever and whenever one finds unpleasant, disagreeable, or disliked objects of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or of the mind, those are the six senses, or whenever and wherever one finds that there are wishers of one's own misfortune, harm, difficulties, or of one's own insecurity, if one gets associated, one meets, one comes into contact, or gets combined with them, this monk's is called the suffering of being associated with what one does not like. And what monk's is the suffering of being disassociated with what one does like? Whenever and whenever one finds pleasant, agreeable, or liked objects of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or the mind, or whenever and wherever one finds that there are wishers of one's own fortune, prosperity, comfort, or one's own security, like mother and father, like brothers and sister, like friends and colleagues or relatives, if one gets disassociated, one does not meet, one does not come into contact, or does not get combined with them, this monk's is called the suffering of being disassociated with what one does not, what one does like. And what monks is not getting what one desires? In beings, monk, who are subject to birth, a desire arises. Oh, truly, that we were not subject to birth. Oh, truly, may there be no new birth for us. But this cannot be obtained by mere desire, and not to get what one wants is suffering. In beings, monks, who are subjected to old age, the desire arises. Oh, truly, that we were not subjected to old age. Oh, truly, may we not be subjected to old age. But this cannot be obtained by mere desire, and not to get what one wants is suffering. In beings, monk, who are subject to sickness, the desire arises. Oh, truly, that we were not subjected to sickness. Oh, truly, may there be no sickness for us. But this cannot be obtained by mere desire, and not to get what one wants is suffering. In beings, monk, who are subject to death, the desire arises. Oh, truly, that we were not subject to death. Oh, truly, may we never have to die. But this cannot be obtained by mere desire, and not to get what one wants is suffering. In beings, monk, who are subject to sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and distress, the desire arises, oh, truly, that we were not subject to sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and distress. Oh, truly, may we not suffer from sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and distress. But this cannot be obtained by mere desire, and not to get what one wants is suffering. And how, monks, in short, is clinging to the five aggregates suffering? It is as follows. Clinging to the aggregate of matter is suffering. Clinging to the aggregate of sensation is suffering. Clinging to the aggregate of perception is suffering. clinging to the aggregate of reaction is suffering. Clinging to the aggregate of consciousness is suffering. This, monks, in short, is called suffering because of clinging to these five aggregates. This, monks, is the noble truth of suffering. Wow, I got to pause for a minute. Every time I read that, my mind just goes, wow. I mean, you know, that's true. That's truth. That is truth in a nutshell. Whenever you read the noble truth of suffering, you know, it says there is suffering, your life is suffering, you go, well, you know, but read that and you just think, yeah, well, yes. there's no debate. I'm sorry. You read that, I don't want to hear any debate. Just shut up. You know, I don't want to hear any argument, rationalization, but this, but that, but I, you know, no, just shut up. Get out of here. Now we're going to go to the second noble truth. Well, I still had to, now I got to pause for a minute. That's just, every time I started reading this when I was 12 years old. And it just stuns me. Exposition on the truth of the arising of suffering. And what, monks, is the noble truth of the arising of suffering? It is this craving that occurs again and again and is bound up with pleasure and lust and finds delight, now here, now there. That is the craving for sensual pleasures, the craving for repeated rebirth, and the craving for annihilation. But where does this craving, monks, arise, and where does it get established? Wherever in the world of mind and matter there is something enticing and pleasurable, there this craving arises and gets established. But what in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable? The I in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The ear is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The nose is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The tongue is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The body is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The mind in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. Visible objects, material forms in the world of mind and matter are enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. Sounds are enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. Smells are enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. Tastes are enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. Touch is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The contents of the mind in the world of mind and matter are enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The I consciousness in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The ear consciousness is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The nose consciousness is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The tongue consciousness is enticing and pleasurable. There, too, this craving arises and gets established. The body consciousness is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The mind consciousness in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. He goes on. The eye contact in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The ear contact is enticing and pleasurable. The nose contact is enticing and pleasurable. The tongue contact is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The body contact is enticing and pleasurable. The mind contact in this world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving arises and gets established. The sensation arising from the eye contact in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There is this craving arising and gets established. The sensation arising from the ear contact is enticing and pleasurable. The sensation arising from the nose contact is enticing and pleasurable. The sensation arising from the tongue contact is enticing and pleasurable. The sensation arising from the body contact is enticing and pleasurable. The sensation arising from the mind contact in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The perception of visible objects of material forms in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The perception of sounds is enticing and pleasurable. The perception of smells is enticing and pleasurable. The perception of tastes is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The perception of touch is enticing and pleasurable. The perception of mental contents in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. See, we're going down the skandhas now, the bundles, the aggregates. The mental reaction to visible objects in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The mental reaction to sounds is enticing and pleasurable. The mental reaction to smells is enticing and pleasurable. The mental reaction to tastes is enticing and pleasurable. The mental reaction to touch is enticing and pleasurable. The mental reaction to mind objects, mental contents in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The craving after visible objects in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. The craving after sounds is enticing and pleasurable. The craving after smells is enticing and pleasurable. The craving after tastes is enticing and pleasurable. The craving after touch is enticing and pleasurable. The craving after mind objects, mental contents in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The thought conception of visible objects in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The thought conception of sounds is enticing and pleasurable. The thought conception of smells is enticing and pleasurable. The thought conception of tastes is enticing and pleasurable. The thought conception of touch is enticing and pleasurable. The thought conception of mind objects, mental contents of the world of mind and matter, is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. The rolling in thoughts of visible objects in the world is enticing and pleasurable. The rolling in thoughts of sounds is enticing and pleasurable. The rolling in thoughts of smells is enticing and pleasurable. The rolling in thoughts of tastes is enticing and pleasurable. The rolling in thoughts of touch is enticing and pleasurable. The rolling in thoughts of mind objects, mental contents in the world is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving arises and gets established. This, monks, is the noble truth of the arising of suffering. Let's take a moment and digest that, because we've just looked at the source of suffering, the arising of suffering. Buddha was like a detective. He was like a doctor diagnosing and prescribing the antidote to suffering. And these are instructions for investigation, independent investigation, and meditation. Each individual is invited to take on his own. And while we do that, why don't we take a pause for station identification, and we'll come back for the third and fourth Noble Truths.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays feature two wonderful shows to suit your taste. On the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance and tips on the practical use of crystals and crystal balls. His show starts at 5 p.m. Pacific Time and lasts for 1 hour. Next is In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, Kai Arman broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Saturday nights from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
And we're back. Our discussion tonight is the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, the great exposition on the development of awareness. The style of these suttas are such that they hammer home these points. They hammer them home, and one can imagine the Buddha with his monks that consisted of everyone from the humblest peasant to nobleman. Buddha was one of the early advocates speaking against the caste system, and he was the very first person to establish a religious order for women so that his mother and sister could join and could be enlightened. And you can see him hammering these points home, just hammering them home, so that no stone was left unturned. And we are about to discuss the noble truth, the third noble truth, the cessation of suffering. So let's just dive right in. And what, monks, is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering? It is the complete fading away and cessation of this very craving, forsaking it and giving it up, the liberation from it, leaving no place for it. But where may this craving, monks, be eradicated? Where may it be extinguished? Wherever in the world of mind and matter there is something enticing and pleasurable, there this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. But what in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable? And now we're going to go down the list again, and I'm going to shorten it because we go down these lists a lot. The I in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The ear is enticing and pleasurable. The nose is enticing and pleasurable. The tongue is enticing and pleasurable. The body is enticing and pleasurable. The mind in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The objects of sight, the material forms in the world of mind and matter, are enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The sounds are enticing and pleasurable. The smells are enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The tastes are enticing and pleasurable. Touch is enticing and pleasurable. The contents of the mind in the world of mind and matter are enticing and pleasurable. There this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The eye consciousness in the world of mind and matter, enticing and pleasurable. There, too, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. Ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, the mind consciousness in the world of mind and matter, is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The eye contact in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. Ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There this craving and this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The sensation that arises from the eye contact in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable, there this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The sensation that arises from ear contact, the sensation that arises from nose contact, the sensation that arises from tongue contact, the sensation that arises from body contact, the sensation that arises from mind contact in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There is where the craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The perception of visible objects in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. The perception of smells, the perception of tastes, the perception of touch, the perception of mental contents in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, too, these cravings may be eradicated and extinguished. The mental reaction toward visible objects in the world is enticing and pleasurable. The mental reaction toward sounds, the mental reaction toward smells, the mental reaction toward tastes, the mental reaction toward touch, the mental reaction toward mental contents in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The craving after visual objects in the world is enticing and pleasurable. The craving after sounds is enticing and pleasurable. The craving after smells, the craving after tastes, the craving after touch, the craving after mental contents in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The thought conception of visible objects in the world is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The thought conceptions of sounds, the thought conception of smells, the thought conception of tastes, the thought conception of touch, the thought conception of mental contents in the world of mind and matter, enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The rolling in thoughts of visible objects in the world of mind and matter is enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. The rolling in thoughts of sounds, the rolling in thoughts of smells, the rolling in thoughts of tastes, the rolling in thoughts of touch, the rolling in thoughts of mental contents in the world of mind and matter, enticing and pleasurable. There, this craving may be eradicated and extinguished. This, monks, is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. And now we go to the exposition of the truth of the path. And this is, of course, the Eightfold Noble Path. And what, monks, is the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering? It is this, the Noble Eightfold Path, namely, right understanding, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right awareness, and right concentration. And what, monks, is right understanding? It is this, monks, the knowledge of suffering, the knowledge of the arising of suffering, the knowledge of the cessation of suffering, the knowledge of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. This, monks, is called right understanding. In other words, right understanding is proper understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And what, monks, is right thought? Thoughts of renunciation, thoughts that are free from aversion, and thoughts that are free from violence. This, monks, is called right thought. And what, monks, is right speech? Abstaining from lying, abstaining from slander and backbiting, abstaining from harsh words, and abstaining from frivolous talk. This, monks, is called right speech. And what, monks, is right action? Abstaining from killing, abstaining from taking what has not been given, and abstaining from sexual misconduct. This, monks, is called right action. These are also the precepts. And what, monks, is right livelihood? Here, monks, a noble disciple, having given up wrong ways of livelihood, earns his right livelihood by right means. This, monks, is called right livelihood. Wrong livelihood is addressed elsewhere. Wrong livelihood is livelihood that involves killing, slavery, selling weapons, killing animals, selling alcohol, selling drugs and alcohol because it's intoxication. There are a few others that are considered wrong livelihood. Anything involving killing and immoral activity, basically, is wrong livelihood. And what, monks, is right effort? Here, monks, a monk generates the will to prevent the arising of unarisen evil, unwholesome mental states. He makes strong effort, stirs up his energy, applies his mind to it, and strives. to eradicate those evil, unwholesome mental states that have arisen in him. He generates the will, makes strong effort, stirs up his energy, applies his mind to it, and strives. To develop wholesome mental states that have not yet arisen in him, he generates will, makes strong effort, stirs up his energy, applies his mind to it, and strives. To maintain wholesome mental states that have arisen in him, not to let them fade away, to multiply them and bring them to full maturity and to full development, he generates will, makes strong efforts, stirs up his energy, applies his mind to it, and strives. This, monks, is called right effort. And what, monks, is right awareness? Here, monks, a monk dwells ardent with awareness and constant thorough understanding of impermanence, observing body and body, having removed craving and aversion toward the world of mind and matter. He dwells ardent with awareness and constant thorough understanding of impermanence, observing sensations and sensations, having removed craving and aversion toward the world of mind and matter. He dwells ardent with awareness and constant thorough understanding of impermanence, observing mind and mind, having removed craving and aversion toward the world of mind and matter. He dwells ardent with awareness and constant thorough understanding of impermanence, observing mental contents and mental contents, having removed craving and aversion toward the world of mind and matter. This, monks, is called right awareness. In other words, everything we've been discussing for the past 3 or 4 hours is right awareness. And what, monks, is right concentration? Here, monks, a monk, detached from craving, detached from unwholesome mental states, enters into the first absorption. Now, this is meditative absorption. Right concentration talks about meditative absorption. Enters into the first absorption, born of detachment, accompanied by initial and sustained application of the mind, and filled with rapture and bliss, and he dwells there. This is sometimes called the first jhana, or samadhi. With the subsiding of initial and sustained application of the mind and gaining inner tranquility and oneness of mind, he enters into the second absorption, the second jhana, born of concentration, free from initial and sustained application of the mind, filled with rapture and bliss, and he dwells therein. After the fading away of rapture, he dwells in equanimity, aware with constant thorough understanding of impermanence, and he experiences in his body the bliss which the noble ones say, that bliss is experienced by one with equanimity and awareness. Thus he enters the third absorption, the third jhana, and dwells therein. After the eradication of pleasure and pain, and with joy and grief having previously passed away, he enters into a state beyond pleasure and pain, the fourth absorption, that is totally purified by equanimity and awareness, and he dwells therein. This, monks, is called right concentration. None of these, by the way, is enlightenment. These are states of meditative absorption, but not enlightenment. This, monks, is the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. Thus he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents internally, or he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents externally, or he dwells observing mental contents and mental contents both internally and externally. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of arising in the mental contents. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of passing away in the mental contents. Thus he dwells observing the phenomenon of arising and passing away in the mental contents. Now his awareness is established. These are mental contents. Thus he develops his awareness to such an extent that there is mere understanding along with mere awareness. In this way, he dwells detached, without clinging toward anything in the world of mind and matter. This is how, monks, a monk dwells observing mental contents in mental contents as regards the four noble truths. And now we enter part six, the results of establishing of awareness. Indeed, monks, whoever practices this fourfold establishing of awareness in this manner for 7 years, he may expect one of two results: in this very life, highest wisdom, or if a substratum of aggregates remains, the stage of non-returner. Non-returner is sotapanna. This means that you will not be reborn. Let alone 7 years, monks, should any person practice this fourfold establishment of awareness in this manner for 6 years, one of two results may be expected of him. In this very life, highest wisdom, or if a substratum of aggregates remain, the stage of non-returner. And then he repeats this several times. Let alone 6 years, monks, let alone 5 years monks, let alone 4 years monks, let alone 3 years monks, let alone 2 years monks, let alone 1 year monk. Should any person practice this fourfold establishment of awareness in this manner for 7 months, one of two results may be expected in him, in his very life, highest wisdom, or if a substratum of aggregates remains, the stage of non-returner, let alone 7 months monks, let alone 6 months, 5 months, 4 months, 3 months, 2 months, 1 month, half a month monks, let alone half a month monks. Should any person practice this fourfold establishment of awareness in this manner for 7 days, one of two results may be expected in him, in his very life, highest wisdom, or if a substratum of aggregates remains, the stage of non-returner. It is for this very reason it was said, this is the one and only way, monks, for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the extinguishing of suffering and grief, for walking on the path of truth, for the realization of nibbana, or nirvana, if you're Sanskrit, that is to say, the fourfold establishing of awareness. Thus the enlightened one spoke, glad in heart, the monks welcomed the words of the enlightened one. And this is the end of the Maha Satipatthana Sutta. Are there any questions? Everything you need to know about Buddhism is contained in that sutta. Now, you have to go research everything that's in there, and there's quite a bit in there, and I hope my explanations was adequate. At some point, we're going to have to go in deeper into the aggregates and also into the chain of dependent origination. what I would like to do now is look at the other point of view. This is one of the hearts of the Theravada scriptures. Next week we're going to go a little bit more in depth into the Heart Sutra, which is one of the hearts of the Mahayana scriptures. And what I would like to do there is read to you now the Heart Sutra. It's very short. And the Heart Sutra, translated literally, is the insight that brings us to the other side. And it was presumably chanted by the Bodhisattva Avalokitesvara. And for those of you who don't know, Avalokitesvara is the Bodhisattva who is continually rebirthed as the Dalai Lama. So Tenzin Gyatso, our current Dalai Lama, is the Bodhisattva Avalokitesvara, who has been reborn as every Dalai Lama, and even before then. So I'm going to read you the Heart Sutra, and it's very short. And then we'll discuss it next week, and we'll also discuss a few other things. The Buddhism series seems to be getting quite a bit of good response, and so we'll just continue that for a little while. So this is a one of many translations to the Heart Heart Sutra, and Avalokitesvara was talking to apparently Buddha's main disciple Sariputra, who was second only to the Buddha in skill. So here we go. Avalokitesvara, while practicing deeply with the insight that brings us to the other shore, suddenly discovered that all of the five skandhas are equally empty, and with this realization he overcame all ill being. Listen, Sariputra, this body itself is emptiness, and emptiness itself is this body. This body is not only other than emptiness, and emptiness is not only other than this body. The same is true of feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. All are emptiness, and emptiness is all. Listen, Sariputra, all phenomena bear the mark of emptiness. Their true nature is the nature of no birth, no death, no being, no non-being, no defilement, no purity, no increasing, no decreasing. That is why in emptiness, body, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness are not separate self-entities. The 18 realms of phenomena, which are the 6 sense organs, the 6 sense objects, and the 6 consciousnesses, are also not separate self-entities. The 12 links of interdependent arising and their extinction are also not separate self-entities. Ill-being, the causes of ill-being, the end of ill-being, suffering, the path, insight, and attainment are also not separate self-entities. Whoever can see this no longer needs anything to attain. Bodhisattvas who practice the insight that brings us to the other shore see no more obstacles in their mind, and because there are no more obstacles in their mind, they can overcome all fear, destroy all wrong perceptions, and realize perfect nirvana. All Buddhas in the past, present, and future, by practicing the insight that brings us to the other shore, are all capable of attaining authentic and perfect enlightenment. Therefore, Sariputra, it should be known that the insight that brings us to the other shore is a great mantra, the most illuminating mantra, the highest mantra, a mantra beyond compare. The true wisdom that has the power to put an end to all kinds of suffering. Therefore, let us proclaim a mantra to praise the insight that brings us to the other shore. Gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhisattva. Gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhisattva. Gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhisattva. And that is the end of the Heart Sutra. And I will tell you that mantra carries a great deal of power and is highly, very highly regarded. Gate gate paragate parasamgate bodhisattva. That is an extremely powerful mantra. Now, some discussion of the Heart Sutra. I will tell you that there are many different translations of this, and there are some famous stories about it. One is a vast misunderstanding of these couplets, body is emptiness and emptiness is body. This has been misinterpreted and is misinterpreted by many, many beginners in Buddhism, that there is no body, there is no mind, there is no consciousness, that these don't exist. And there's many, many stories. There is a story about a monk who came to a Zen master, Tui Trung, I think it was one of the venerables. And the Zen master asked him, tell me about what you think about the Heart Sutra. And the novice monk said, I understand that the five skandhas are empty. There are no such thing as eyes or nose or ears, tongue, body, mind. No such thing as form, sound, smells, taste, feelings. No objects of the mind. The six consciousness don't exist. The 18 realms of phenomena don't exist. The 12 links of dependent arising don't exist. And even wisdom and attainment don't exist. And the Zen master said, do you believe what it says? Yes, I truly believe what it says. And the Zen master says, come close to me. And the monk did, and the Zen master grabbed his nose between his thumb and finger and pinched it really hard. And the monk said, ow, ow, you're hurting me, master, you're hurting me. And the Zen master gave the monk one of those Zen master looks and said, just now you said the nose doesn't exist. But the nose doesn't exist, and what's hurting? That's one of those Zen things. Then there was another example. This is all 13th, 14th century stuff. Another monk came to visit the Zen master, and it may have been the same one, Tui Trung. He said, respected master, what does the phrase form is emptiness, emptiness is form really mean? And the master remained silent. And then after a while he said, monk, do you have a body? And he goes, yes, I do. Then why do you say the body doesn't exist? And then the eminent master said, do you think that in empty space there is form? And the monk said, no, I don't see any form there. Then why do you say emptiness is form? And the monk stood up and he bowed and went on his way. But the master said, hey, come back here. And he recited, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, is a skillful means created temporarily by the Buddhas of the three times. Emptiness is not form, form is not emptiness. Their nature is always pure and illuminating, neither caught in being nor in non-being. And so it seems that sometimes masters would contradict the Heart Sutra and challenge this formula, which is sacred. The Heart Sutra is sacred, that form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And this is sometimes considered, written in stone in the Prajnaparamita literature. Now, there's some debate. Now, is it that Master Tui Trung went too far? Did he go too far? And that he did not see that the mistake was not in the formula, form is emptiness, but it resides in the unskillfulness of the line, maybe, that in emptiness there is no form? Now, Now, or maybe the Heart Sutra is perfect, that there is some lack of recording, and that is the addition of, or the admonition that there is no being and no non-being. It would understand the idea that there's no self-nature in anything. The body exists, but it has no self-nature, in other words. The body exists, but has no self-nature. And if you can get that, now, the problem is that these lines seem to contradict each other. Listen, Shariputra, because in emptiness there is no form, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness. That's emptiness. But then later on it says, emptiness is form, and form is emptiness. Now you say the opposite. There's only emptiness, there's no body. That can lead to many misunderstandings. It removes everything from the phenomenon of being and places them in the category of non-being. But the true nature of all phenomenon in Buddhism is the nature of non-being, not self. So because the ideas of being and not being are called extreme views in Buddhism. And that's why the monk's nose is still sore, you see. He believed he didn't have a body. And obviously he did. Both are extreme views. That's like Buddha never taught that he never came out and said there was no self. He taught not self. At the one time when someone asked him directly, he never answered. And when his friend Ananda said, "Why didn't you answer?" He said, "Well, if I did, Vasugata would be afraid that the self he used to have didn't exist anymore." He taught not self, not no self, not self, that there's no self nature in things. And so to say that you don't exist is obviously ridiculous. So what we find in the Heart Sutra is that there obviously is something there. There's a body there, nose there, consciousness there, but there's no self nature in it. And so what this is helping us do is overcome the idea of opposites. That we overcome the idea of opposites. Being, not being, birth, death, defilement, impurity, increasing, decreasing, object and subject. We get past that. That's a big pain in my neck, the idea that we separate objects and subjects, even in language, verb, and noun. You can't separate an object from its action. You know, do you understand that? An object is always in, always action. A table is always being, is always tabling. A ball is always balling. A person is always personing. You cannot separate noun and verb. That's not possible. An object is always its action. So you can't separate these things. And so what we find in the Heart Sutra is a description of ultimate truth, which, and if we try to see it in terms of conventional truth, we're going to get very confused. We're going to get very, very confused. And that's the way some of these Mahayana sutras are. You have to see them not in terms of conventional truth like Newtonian physics, but in conventional truths in terms of how a arhat or an enlightened being sees the world. So next week I'm going to compile a discussion on the Heart Sutra and a few other stupefyingly deep and wise sutras and suttas and discussions of the Buddha and other wise masters, and we'll continue our discussion of this. It is a fascinating thing, and believe me, it will not only blow your mind, it will liberate your mind. I'm John St. Germain. Thanks so much for joining us in the Crystal Silence League Hour. Happy Halloween, Samhain, which is Sabbath, and other things for you, and happy All Saints Day when November hits. I'm out of here.
Does your heart long to wander? To discover the deep secrets of coral reefs? Explore the wonders of the California coast and island hop from the Galapagos to Madagascar? Feed your wild heart. Travel the world right here in San Francisco at the California Academy of Sciences. Get tickets at calacademy.org. See penguin feedings, puppet shows, and other live programs daily at the Academy.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now it's our lowest price of the season on our top-selling i8 smart bed. Your best savings, plus free home delivery with any base. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. All Sleep Number smart beds offer temperature solutions for your best sleep. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.